Welcome to Reg Ramblings, everybody. I'm not even going to try and pronounce your name. I'm horrible. And one of the things I was looking at in researching about Serbia, the language is nothing like anything else I've seen. Because yesterday I was talking with a guy from Australia. Then the other day, a lady down in Mexico. And then the first one was another lady down in Ecuador. So Spanish has a lot of English similarities. Yeah. And of course, Australia is mainly English, just with a different accent. Serbian, on the other hand, whoa, the alphabet, the language. So tell everybody who you are and what you do, and you know, a quick little bio about yourself.
Sure. My name is Lex Butchko, and yes, it is a different language. We don't have letter X, and every time you use X, you use KS, which is why it's Lex. My full name is really Alexandra, but I just go by Lex. And that's why Eastern Europe, if you look at any names from Eastern Europe, it's usually like Alexander with KS, and you know, you'll see that in Russia too. That's Serbian is actually very similar to Russian, but it is absolutely nothing like any other language. So yeah. So yeah, it's actually very similar to Russian, but let me start, you said, to say a little bit about me. I am from Serbia. It is a small country in the Balkans. It's in Eastern Europe. When I was born, the country was called Yugoslavia, and it was, I believe, six states total. And then, you know, throughout years, it fell apart. There were a lot of wars. There was a lot of stuff going on. And I was born in 82. So when I was 17 in 99, I moved to the United States. And I lived in the United States for 20 years. And I went back to Serbia about a couple years ago because I actually reconnected with my eighth grade love. And we started a family. But ever since, I've been trying to get out of here. Because in the 20 years that I've lived in the United States, I never realized just how much I've changed. And you don't see that, right, until you actually go back to your roots, where you are from.
Yeah.
So that's me.
All right, well, that's cool. So you spent 20 years here in the States, and then you went back. And you said that there are some things why you want to get back out and leave.
Yeah.
What are some of those things that you're seeing over there that makes you want to get back out again?
So, you know, when I left 20 years ago, I was 17. And obviously, that's a very different outlook on life just by, you know, being a teenager. But I'm all about self-growth, growth mindset. I'm all about working on you. I'm all about growing and expanding. And sure, there's a lot of people that live in the United States that don't see the opportunities that they have, but it's way easier for them to see the opportunities if somebody presents to them, if they're willing to go out there and search for information. Where here, it's more that people were taught differently generations ago, and you can still see the effect of that. And what I mean by that is, few decades ago, let's say 30, 40, 50 years ago, Serbia was a socialist. And I don't know how much you know about socialism, but it's like you share everything. Everything is public. Yeah. So when I was growing up, and this is a lot of stuff that's really hard for a lot of Americans to understand because it's so different. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, all the like stores, like the food stores and the shoe stores, and like you go to buy clothes, all of that was government owned. So you had there was like nobody who had private business. So in that sense, nobody could develop, you know, like you go through stages in your own business. You have to learn certain things and you have to think a certain way. So that was non-existent. And, you know, while now there's a lot of private small businesses and bigger businesses, you still see the effects of socialism. You still see that people are not fully free to think freely, to think outside of the box, which it makes sense. If they had no exposure to the outside world, it's hard to see that, right?
Exactly.
So in the 20 years that I was in the United States, coming back here, for some reason, I expected things to be the same as in the United States. And then I started noticing differences. And I started noticing that I just don't fit in here anymore. I just can't, even though I speak the language, I can't get on the same page with people. And my husband, even though he's from here, he's the same way. Like he wants to get out of here. He wants to, you know, move on and see what the world has to offer. And I would say that's the main reason why we want to leave. And then we have a 1.5-year-old son, and I want him to grow up in a different environment for that reason. I want him to see the opportunities that he has in the world.
Yeah.
So we were looking at either United States or going to Mexico. Actually, you mentioned you were talking to someone in Mexico, and we were looking at Los Cabos, where it's very Americanized, but it's still Mexico. Okay. And we agreed on that. So once this whole situation settles down, we're looking into going there because it's a different culture, but it's still Americanized enough. And then my son can learn Spanish as well as us. And that's definitely like something that I'd love to do. So that's it in a nutshell as to why.
I got you. Well, if you're interested or haven't fully settled on that, the lady from Ecuador I spoke to is her and her husband are selling their spot.
Well, and there
it's,
you
it's
go.
In a beach town. It's in a beach town in Ecuador. So I think she said she's like a few blocks from the ocean.
Wow.
So you want to look into that.
Yeah, you never know how the universe works, right? You're definitely going to have to connect me with her.
I got you. You came to America for 20 years. What brought you to America? At 17, was it your choice? Was it a family choice?
It's interesting that you asked that because it's kind of complicated, but interesting, I think, to people. During that time, that was post-war and all that stuff that was going on here. It was very common for people to go to United States to finish high school. So 17, 18, maybe even 16, they would go finish high school and go back. Rarely would they stay. I came to finish high school. And then when I wanted to return, my parents or my family decided that it was a better choice for me to stay there. So long story short, I ended up staying there, which at the time was very traumatic for me to feel abandoned by my family.
Yeah.
And see why they did it, right? Because I was 17, and I wanted to get home and I couldn't go home. But it's interesting how life works because that turned out to be like the best thing that happened to me in my life is that I actually stayed in the United States and I was able to finish college, start my business, have a business, and then, you know, now decide what I want to do with my life. So it was actually at that time a very dark moment of my life, I would say. But then that turned out to be like how can you turn the most negative things into the most positive? And that's how, because now looking back 20 years, like if I came back and if I was stuck here for the next 20 years, I would never achieve the success. And I would never be the person that I am today if I was in Serbia for those 20 years.
Yeah, that definitely speaks on, like you mentioned about growth and everything. Cause I don't have any major uprooting experience like that, but there are a lot of things from my childhood that at the time I thought were horrible and this, that, and the other, and why'd whoever do that? But then as you get through it and grow and start a family and all that kind of stuff, you look back at it, you're like, well, hell, that made me a better person. A lot of that, but there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of that. Yes.
Yeah, and it's hard to, because my son's six now, and anytime he gets in trouble, you know, he's upset and he's mad at us, right? Because we'll ground him or whatever. And I'm like, buddy, like, I know you're mad right now, but later on, you'll look back like, well, daddy didn't hate me, you know, daddy was doing what was right. I'm like, I know that doesn't make sense right now, but give it a few years, you'll understand. And it's hard to explain that to somebody who's going through something like that, that eventually it'll all make sense.
It's very hard. It's very hard when you're going through anything in your life to go, oh, yeah, like I'm going to have full faith that this is going to work in my favor, right? And because you're like, oh, my God, like my whole world is falling apart at times, right, depending on what's going on. But then always a silver lining, right? Like when the time goes on, and it's like same thing. Like when I came back here 2 years ago, my life went to really bad, really bad. It was really bad. And at that time, I was like, what is happening? Like I worked on me for so long. I worked on my life. Like, why is my life falling apart right now? Where now, looking back just a year or two ago, it was like, man, if I never went through that, I wouldn't have the confidence that I have right now. I wouldn't be the person that I am. And I know that the next time something hard happens in my life, I'll probably still be like, oh my God, like, what is
happening? Yeah. Yeah, you don't know it till after the fact. Even if you know it for a previous experience, if something new comes around, you're like, oh,
yeah,
here we go again.
Yeah, it's just, it's a mindset game. And it's always like, you know, the whole mindset thing, you know, like it's the meaning that you assign to it. But again, while you're going through the storm, it's really hard to see it.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things I was looking at, I'm a big foodie, right? Mm-hmm. I love food. And one of the things I like to do when I'm talking to somebody from another country is like traditional cuisine over there. And again, I have no idea how to pronounce anything in the certain language.
Those words are tricky.
Whoa, yes. But I'm going to attempt it. And if anyone from Serbia watches this, my apologies for butchering your language.
They're just gonna appreciate you trying, so it's all good.
I'm gonna try. But one of the things I looked at is cevapi.
You got it, cevapi. Yeah.
Okay. What is that? I'm looking at some grilled meats.
Yeah.
What exactly is that?
It's ground meat mixed with spices, and it comes about like a shape like this, and Serbia is really big on meat. So it's cevapi is very big. It's kind of like a hamburger.
Okay.
But I find that it's got a whole lot more spices to it. And you often
kind of like a sausage.
No, still more like a hamburger, just in a sausage shape, right?
Okay.
So that's that. It's got a lot of spices to it, and you often eat it with onion. Onion is goes
yeah that's what it's got in the picture.
Yeah
Another one that definitely looks more hamburger like to me is I'm gonna spell this one out. I'm not even gonna attempt it. PLJ
Pleskavica.
EK say that.
Pleskavica.
I'm gonna let you say that one then. All right, so it looks good. It looks thinner than like American hamburger.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
That's very much like a burger. Yes. And it usually comes. So those kinds of buns I've never seen in the United States. They have a specific kind of a bun here. It just seems more fresh, I would say. I don't eat that kind of food. So like, forgive me for not knowing the details of it. But it's usually a little bit flatter, but wider. Yeah. And it comes on that different kind of bun. And then you get like, you know, different salads on top of that. And like, you know, cabbage or sour cream and onion. Here we go again with the onion. So that's also very traditional food. Yes. If you've noticed, there's a lot of meat on the Serbian plate.
Yes.
A lot of meat. Yeah.
Which is great for me. If I ever go. So you said, you know, when your family left you in America and you see that now that it was a good thing and now you're back, but you want to leave again for everything that's still going on there. Are there still some things though that you'll miss, I guess you can say, of Serbia? Like stuff that you do take pride in being from Serbia?
So if you asked anybody else, they would probably say yes, but I am not big on where you're from, which I have to explain. I come from a country, again, this was Yugoslavia, and there was a few different states, and there was a lot of wars going on because of politics, because of different religion, and because of nationalism, right? And I think that's where it started for me to just be like, I don't want to care about where I'm from so much, right? And when I meet someone, it's more about what life you chose to live as opposed to where you were born and in what family and where from, if that makes sense. So, So also working on me and being alone there in the United States, I actually didn't associate myself with a lot of Serbian people in the United States either, which also helped my self-growth because I surrounded myself with Americans. I surrounded myself with other foreigners, which allowed me to learn about different cultures, learn about people, learn about how it is to be American, right? And I let go that side of me, right? Like I don't necessarily identify myself as Serbian. You know, I'm honestly more American because from 17 to like 36, 37, those are like serious years where you're really developing who you are, right?
Find out who you are.
So I would say I would identify more of myself somewhere along the lines of being an American. So, and then, you know, I don't eat this food. So like, I hardly eat meat at all. So we really don't really, you know, make this food. And I, coming from the United States and again, being surrounded with different cultures, I am showing my husband all these different foods and all these different things that we can make, you know, and then he's just so excited about that. And it just took this whole other thing, right? Now, one thing that I will say about Serbia is there are things that I've never experienced that I wish that I had back way back when, which is festivals. There's a lot of, from what I heard, really great festivals, like the Exit is a huge one. That's a, like one of the biggest festivals in Europe. It's a music festival. And there is a trumpet festival actually as well once a year, which is a huge event. So there are quite a few different festivals that I've never been to and I heard great things about them. And that is, I would say, one thing that I, well, maybe when my son is bigger, maybe we'll experience that, but it's not a deal breaker for me, right? There are things in the United States, there's festivals that I've never been to that I want to see in the world, right? So that would be one thing that I would say that I would wish that I had seen in person. Other than that, not so much. You know, again, I identify myself more as an American, and that's why I'm more like, oh wait, like I need to go back closer to the United States because that life makes more sense to me, right?
I got you. Well, one of the things as me, an American who just looks at this stuff from you know, my own neck of the woods over here, I did obviously read a fair amount about, you know, the wars that were going on back then, but I'm trying to keep this sort of lively. So I didn't want to dwell much on that. I wanted to talk about the cool stuff and the interesting stuff. But one of the things I've always loved, like, again, I mentioned, you know, being a foodie, is nature. Mm-hmm. And obviously being over there in Serbia, there's a lot of old landmark settlements. One of the things I was reading is that Serbia is one of the oldest civilizations in Europe, one of the oldest ones that there is. And so I'm looking, I got something pulled up, and I guess let me know if you've been to these places and tell me a little bit about them. And again, I'm going to attempt their names. So apologies. It's a spring, Krupasko. Oh man, I don't know. Krelo.
Krelo.
V.
Oh, Vrelo. Yes.
Yeah.
Vrelo.
And I'm looking at this picture, and it looks amazing. It's a deep blue lake. And a gorgeous spring, apparently. Is that a spot that you're aware of?
That is not that particular one, but Serbia has a ton of those places. A ton of spa cities, like where there is just, complete nature, just as it always was, with springs, and so you have super fresh water right out of the spring. Yeah. And then they created those little towns, and it's like you have spas. So what people do is they go to these places and stay for a few days as a vacation, and it's literally spa treatments every day. It's just like literally, and it's not comparing to US spa prices, it's like nothing, right? You can very affordably for like $200-$300, you can go there for like 5 days and just go to the spa every single day. Like I'm talking like sauna and hydro massages and massages and a, you know, the swimming pool and the hot tub and like all kinds of stuff. So there are a ton of those around, and I've been to some, I've heard about some, but they have been ranked as top in Europe for that. There's there's a few where they have the natural mud that's full of sulfur that's extremely beneficial for injuries. So people who have aches and pains and previous injuries, they go there. And I did that when I was 16. I actually had an injury when I was 16. And it does not smell good at all because it's sulfur.
For sure.
It is not pleasant. You don't want to go there on an empty stomach. But it is extremely full of minerals and very beneficial for healing. So you have people from all over Europe coming to those springs and those spas to just have a vacation, basically, in a spa. Yeah. Like, you know, you're not just sitting around in a pool. You're actually, like, getting a massage every day. And I don't know. They have, like, a ton of programs. I went to one with my husband, and I was just, like, overwhelmed with the amount of things that they had over there to offer.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things I've always been intrigued by, because obviously here in America, strictly America, hasn't been around for but a few hundred years. The you know, the country of America,
right,
or the government of America, whatever you call it. But over there, you know, civilization over there in Europe's been around for hundreds of thousands. People have been living there. It's well documented and everything. So stuff like this, that hundreds of thousands, they found this spring of water and, like I said, mud, and just it's still going on hundreds, if not thousands of years afterwards. There's still businesses in those areas, and it's practically untouched, which doesn't happen a lot here. Things are great where you normally cut it down and build like a condo,
make a business out
or
of it.
Shopping
like,
mall.
Let's get this mud in like cases and sell them out, right?
Exactly. We got to take it for our own and make Americanize it.
Now that's not
one
a
of
bad
things
idea.
One of the things I was also looking at is iron gates. Are you aware of what that is?
No, that one I'm not. Maybe we're translating. Is it the? Tell me, what is it?
It seems like I got the Serbian translation of it. Durdap Gorge?
Yes. So yeah, there are, again, there's quite a bit of those historical, they're now turned into monument type things.
Yeah.
Actually, the most famous one is called Kale Megdan. And that one is in the city where I'm at, in Belgrade, in the capital. And it's actually a fort that was built centuries ago, because Serbia was under Turkey, which at the time was Ottoman Empire, you know, centuries. So they built a lot of forts, and that the one that you're mentioning is actually that same, well, a different one, but it's a fort. And the one that I'm mentioning, Kale Megdan, it's enormous. It's really big, and it's they have tours to go over there, but they don't really explore the whole place because it's built like a maze. You know, so amazing to look at how it was built, because it was a fort, and they wanted to have ways around that nobody else knew about, right?
Yeah.
And so there are quite a bit of those around the whole Serbia. And they do maintain them pretty well because it is so old, like it's, you know, centuries old, and it looks great. And it's, you know, it's beautiful to visit that because, that is, like you said, United States is not that old. So it's amazing when you go to a place where you just know that it's, you know, few centuries old, and you're like, whoa, like that's got power in it, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
from like 12th century. So those places are really cool, and they're really maintaining them where they reconstruct things that have fallen apart, and they make sure they're looking original. And then they put lights so that you can go there and have a walk at night as well. So it's they make those tours, and they make them touristic, you know, places for tourists to go. So yes, there's that's one thing that Serbia has, a lot of history, a lot of history.
Yeah, because you mentioned the Ottoman Empire, and I remember that was like, I think, one of the last empires that like controlled a huge chunk of Europe.
Yeah.
And like, I know growing up here in the States and learning world history, you know, we were taught, you know, Roman history, the Roman Empire, and you know, Julius Caesar and all that kind of stuff. But the Ottoman Empire was never really spoke of a lot. I don't think I really looked much into it till after I graduated. But then you see how a huge chunk of Europe that it controlled is like, why have I never heard of this?
Yes.
You know, they controlled a huge amount.
Yes, they were extremely powerful. And actually, Serbia was under Ottoman Empire, which again nowadays is Turkey, for 5 centuries. So I actually have a very interesting fact for you, since you wanted to.
Let's do it.
All right. So neighboring country to Serbia is Bosnia. And Bosnia was a part of Yugoslavia too. In Bosnia, there are Croatians living who are Catholics. Mm-hmm. There are Serbians who are who are Orthodox. And then there are Bosnian Muslims. And actually, it's interesting how Muslims are in that part of Europe at all. And as a matter of fact, that was during Ottoman Empire that, because that was Turkey, they are predominantly Muslim. At that time, people were given, families were given a choice whether they're going to convert to Islam or whether and keep their properties, or whether they're going to lose everything they have. It was one of the rules that Ottoman Empire had. And that is how that started, because there were families that would convert. And actually what they did at the time is, you know, like families were big, right? They had like 8, 10 kids. So they would convert. Some of their children would convert to Islam, and someone would stay Orthodox, so that they keep the property and ideally keep their original religion. However, you're talking about 5 centuries under Ottoman Empire. So that's basically 10 generations out of Ottoman Empire. So those children would have children, and they would actually start practicing Islam. And that is how there are Bosnian Muslims actually on the territory of Bosnia. They have converted under Ottoman Empire, and you know, Bosnia is so like, it's so separated from the rest of the Muslim countries, and it's interesting because you have people who fully, truly, 100% practice, and then you have those that, you know, call themselves Muslims, but they're just like, you would never be able to tell where. I found that interesting, because I always my friends who were Muslim in the United States would always be more on the side of practicing, you know, and they would be from Italy, so you'd automatically know. And, you know, it's just it's an interesting mixture of cultures and religions and how people identify and behave under those religions. So there you go. Hopefully that was an interesting fact.
Oh, yeah, I enjoy it. Anytime I'm learning something new, it's always great for me. So one of the other things when we spoke of, anytime I'm going to attempt a word here in Serbia, is y'all have technically 2 different alphabets.
Yes. Good research.
I do my best. Explain that to people, because obviously you come, you know, living in America, we have our alphabet, and I'm assuming a majority of folks that listen, when they think of a language, you're generally only going to think of one alphabet, right? Yeah. But y'all kind of combine them in a sense.
Yes.
How does that work? And explain that a little bit, if you don't mind.
No, I don't at all. So Serbia is like, they look at Russia as like a big brother, right? Like we were always protected by Russia, and Russia is very similar to our country. And like, again, centuries ago, we were all one people, like we were Slavs, yes. right? So there's a lot of similarities in the cultures. So if you look at Russian language and Russian alphabet, Serbian alphabet is very, very similar to theirs. There's
yeah.
a little bit of difference. The language mm-hmm. became quite different. So when I listen to Russian, I can kind of understand what they're talking about, but I can't really speak with them.
Okay? Yeah.
So that's how the language, we got the Cyrillic letters, right? Like we got that alphabet, Cyrillic, it's called. And then I don't know exactly when that occurred, but a few times in the past, Serbia and Croatia and a few of the surrounding countries would create another country. So when it was Yugoslavia, it was all these different states. And out of those states, only Serbia and I believe Macedonia had Cyrillic alphabet, where the other countries countries used only regular alphabet as we know it, which we call Latin. We call it Latin alphabet.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So when we became a country, in order to be able to fully communicate, mm-hmm. Serbs have adopted both letters, because Croatians, for example, spoke the pretty much exactly the same language, but they had Latin alphabet and we had mm-hmm. Cyrillic. And so in Serbia, we were always taught both alphabets. Like when I was going to school, first, second, third grade, when you're learning, we were learning both. Like we were like, okay, today we're writing in Cyrillic, and we would write. And then today the test is going to be in Latin alphabet, and we would write in that. So that's how we actually adopted both, which again ended up being a great thing, because when people started using the keyboard and the computer, Russia was struggling because they couldn't have their letters at first in the beginning, and they were struggling to type on Latin alphabet, where mm-hmm. for Serbia, it was much easier because we can switch between both. And it's very interesting how much people use both and not even notice that.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I actually visited Serbia for about a week when I was living in the United States, and I grabbed a book. And I opened the book, and like half the book was in Cyrillic and half of it was in the Latin alphabet. And I was like, what is this? Like, why is this? And I would show it to my friend, and she's like, oh my God, I would have never noticed until you said that. So it's so interchanged. Like the signs on the street, like the street names, one are in Cyrillic, and then another one is in the other.
Latin alphabet.
And it's so interchanged that people don't even notice the difference anymore. They don't mix it within the same sentence, but they definitely mix it all over the place. Like some of the signs are one, some of them are the other. Oftentimes on TV, like in the news, you would see Cyrillic mainly, but you would really never know. You really never know. And then when I came here, it was so funny to me to see so many American words or English words used.
Yeah.
You know, like the computer, and there's so many different websites, you know, and using those words, that people create names for their companies in English too, right?
Yes,
so then they have to use the what's called Latin alphabet, and they can't use Cyrillic really. So it's an interesting mixture, I think, and I like knowing both, because I always believe that the more the brain has to work, the better it is for the brain. I won't force my kid to know Cyrillic. If he's interested in learning that, he'll have a chance to learn to do so. Because, it's going to be his choice whether he wants to have the opportunity to live here one day or not. I'm not big on that, but it's nice knowing that. And if you're interested in languages, another really interesting one for you to look at is Greek. That one is a completely different one too. So,
I know from the lady down in Ecuador I spoke to does a lot of, like brain development, growing and learning, and a lot of stuff geared towards holding off dementia as you get older.
Yeah.
And she mentioned about, always branch out and listening to various forms of music outside of your own, which I already do anyway. So that's always been a thing that I enjoy. And obviously learning languages. I think she mentioned that she knows three or four. And me, I only know English. I know a little bit of Spanish from living in the South here in America. I know a little bit of German, mainly just from various music. Not enough to speak on anything, but I've always wanted to get pretty fluent in Spanish, German, Mandarin, Japanese, and Russian.
Whoa.
So I might add Greek into that, possibly. But I think, I feel like besides English, obviously, those are five of the probably more dominant languages in the world. So figure I would love if at one point to be able to travel with my family all over the place. And if I could just, you know, easily just slip in and speak the native tongue, I won't get looked at like, oh, you're an American. I'm like, yeah, I know the language, though.
You know,
I put in the effort.
Yes. And that's what people appreciate. I think about that. Like, you know, when you meet somebody foreign, you so appreciate when they're trying to speak English, even though it can be completely broken English. You're just like, oh my God, but like you're trying, you know? And so it's the same thing when you go somewhere else, you know, they look, they like when you're actually trying to speak, and that's the best way to learn the language. I learned I learned French in school from first grade, and I wouldn't know to tell you a whole sentence in French right now because I learned it in school. I was in Venezuela during the whole war thing. I was in Venezuela for 3 months and nobody spoke English around me. Definitely nobody spoke Serbian. So I had to literally like wave arms and legs and figure out my way through Spanish. And at that time, within a couple months, I was able to fully have conversations with people. My only issue was I would just ask them to speak a little slower when they speak to me.
Yeah.
Other than that, I was actually able to have conversations with people. And so in 2 months in Venezuela, I learned more Spanish than I ever learned French in like 10 years of school. That's why if you do get an opportunity to travel, like spend a month or two in that country and you will be fluent. It's amazing how you're surrounded with that.
For sure. Yeah, I think you kind of hit on something that I'm big on. It, anytime like I'm trying to learn something new, like at first I take baby steps with it and just to try and I guess get the basics of whatever the thing is. And then I just throw myself into it 100%. So like there's no other better way to learn than just throwing yourself in the fire and have it all surrounding you. Like, oh God, like you're forced, basically. You're forced to do better and to learn better. And that could back like just like that, going to Venezuela, not knowing anything.
Oh God.
And you have no choice. You have no choice.
Yes. Exactly. So there was a lady that we stayed with and she spoke Spanish only. And she would sit and speak to me in hours. And so like the first day I'm like, I don't understand, like, me no comprendo, I don't, and she would continue talking, and so after, like, fifth time, you're like, I'll just let you talk, and that was so awesome, because I would listen to Spanish all the time, and then what I did at that time, I used to watch Friends show on TV, and I would, they would speak English, but I would put subtitles in Spanish.
The captions,
So I would listen to English and then read on Spanish right away. And like that just like makes it, you pick it up right away. Yeah, you have no choice.
For sure.
That's when the brain gets fully engaged.
Oh, yeah.
You have no choice.
Yeah, I think no matter what your age, if you're forced to do something and you have no other choice, you're going to do it regardless.
Yes.
Because again, you have no choice.
The best for the brain. It's the best, the hardest exercise, but the best one for the brain. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. It's definitely stressful, but you can do it. Hell, anybody can do it. If I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah.
I can do it. One of the things I've always loved about any other culture is like the urban legends, you know, the mythical creatures, mythology, like Greek mythology, all that kind of stuff, basically. And in looking into it, you know, normally when I think of vampires, you know, people think of, you know, Vlad and Count Dracula in Romania.
Yes.
Well, I was surprised that according to some articles that I found that even though, you know, some will say that Count Dracula is one of the first like things written about vampires and culture back in the day. But Others will point to a Peter Blagojevich.
Yes.
Who's, and a lot of those articles say that he's actually the first like written encounter or acknowledgement, I guess, of the vampire mythos back there. And he's from Serbia.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about old Peter Blagojevich?
I do. The same thing that you read, nobody really knows where that whole thing started. And that's a little bit of a problem with history being written by only a few people, right? Because you have to believe what they say, right?
Yes.
And so it's the same here. Of course, you know, there's quite a few characters or quite a few people that are from here that people still argue over where they're from, right? So it's the same with that. Like, are the vampires originally from here, or did Romania take the credit for it? Or, you know, like, where did that whole thing start? So it really just depends on who you talk to. It really just depends on whether people are going to be like, no, it started here, and like, they took it from us.
Yeah.
So people who are like, no, like, it was all from this area, and it's like too much gray to know where it began. And it's the same with like Nikola Tesla, the famous scientist, you know.
Oh yeah, we were going to get there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll wait for you to get there. So yeah, so it's
oh no, you can jump into it right now.
Okay.
It's fine.
Okay, what I was going to say is, you know, like, he's Serbian, and he was born in Croatia, and then from what I know, from what I understand, and then now, like, you still have people nowadays who argue, is he Croatian or is he Serbian? And it is one of the nerves that you can hit with Serbs.
Really?
Is if you say that Nikola Tesla is Croatian. Like, if you want to piss off a Serbian, say that Nikola Tesla is Croatian. Like, that's going to just, that's it. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So they take a lot of pride in Nikola Tesla. There's a museum in Belgrade with his, well, actually, it was his home. So there's a lot of his stuff here, and a lot of things that he's done here. And like, he's people have adopted him as a big part of who we are. And understandably so. We're a very, very small country, and we're getting smaller by the hour. Like, there's less and less people being born, and more people leaving. So it's very important for people to maintain, you know, who they are. And again, being nationalist, I don't want to say that, but like, just being proud of who they are. So there's a lot of pride in, you know, saying that Nikola Tesla is from Serbia. Like, my dad is huge on Nikola Tesla. He bought my son, and so my son has this shirt with Nikola Tesla on it. He's like a year and a half old, you know. And so I'll ask him, like, where's Nikola Tesla? He's like, he's showing the picture, you know. So it's like, he has to know right away who Nikola Tesla is. So it was a really great surprise when Tesla Motors came out, and he was like, wow, they're celebrating the name of Nikola Tesla.
Because
there's still a lot of people that don't know about him and what he has done. So yes, it just goes back to what you read and what people want to claim and what they are willing to accept as true.
Yeah. One of the things I was also looking into that caught me off guard, so hopefully you know a little bit more about it, is everyone, I'm assuming, especially being in America for 20 years, you've heard of James Bond.
Yeah.
No, the movie got character in the books and everything. Did you know that apparently the James Bond character was derived from a Serbian?
That I didn't know.
All right.
That's some good research right there. I am getting educated here. That I didn't know. But I knew that one of the last, the casino one, one of the last James Bond was filmed in Montenegro. Which at the time was the country with Serbia. So it was actually filmed very close to here. But that's a very interesting fact piece of information that you found.
Yeah, I'm looking, I'm gonna attempt his name. He was born in 1912. Dusko Popov?
Dusko Popov, you got it.
Okay. So he is apparently the inspiration for James Bond. Says he was a Serbian triple agent who served as part of MI6 and Abwehr.
That I don't
know. ABWEHR.
That's Serbian. That's not Serbian. We don't have letter W. So that's some other agency.
Oh, I'm looking at now. That was part of the German military intelligence. But yeah, so y'all can take pride also in James Bond, I guess.
I'm going to have to research this because now I'm curious. Now I want to know. That's a pretty cool fact. Well, here's a question for you. I don't know if you've done research on this, but do you know that Albert Einstein's wife was Serbian?
Okay. So are you going to go into, I didn't look much into it, but I saw an article that said that a lot of, and I'm assuming definitely a lot of Serbians then, if this is where we're going, think, or their claim is, I'm going to say claim because I don't know, that he stole his idea of the theory of relativity from her.
So once again, this is one of those things that we'll never know. However, yes. there's a lot more evidence now than before that she was a scientist as well and worked very closely with him. And we all know, or it's a known fact, that he was not good at math. He was great at physics, right? And she was great at math. She was like a math genius. So they worked together very closely in a lot of ideas. And it's just one of those things that you never know. Did she come up with that and it was stolen? Did he come up with that? Did they work that together? But as a woman at that time, she definitely would never have gotten any credit. And then he was a great scientist. From what I read, he was a great scientist. But as just being like social human being, he was not the best at that. So his name, right? He was a little awkward, which scientists usually are. Nikola Tesla was the same way. So their marriage was very turbulent, and then they ended up getting divorced. They had a child or two. They ended up getting divorced, but supposedly they continued working together. So the claim is, and I've heard this in the United States actually, they're claiming that there's a lot of things that she came up with and she worked very closely with him on a lot of ideas, but she's getting no credit because he was a woman scientist at the time, and you know, all the books were written about him. But there is at least one book that I know that was written particularly about her and the work that she's done with him. And there's evidence based on like the handwriting and the things that they've done together. So there's a lot more evidence as to, you know, both of them were together in building things. So yeah, yay, she was a female scientist at that time. You know, like we're definitely gonna take pride in that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think in that, because over the years, you know, we've learned that Alexander Graham Bell didn't necessarily really invent the telephone. He stole the idea from, I can't remember the other guy, but he stole the idea from somebody else. And then with Tesla and Edison, you know, there's a lot of backstabbing there.
Edison thing,
And like you said, you know, when history was written back then, it's written off who was the most powerful, really. And like you said, you know, Einstein being a man, surely back in the day, he got the credit for it strictly because he was a man. And I think it's funny you mentioned, brought that up, because another thing that I learned recently, like within the last few years about Einstein, is that, like I said, he was very socially awkward like Tesla, but he was also a womanizer. And that's not really spoken of a lot. Obviously, you know, if you're going to praise this man for all he's done in science and furthering the human culture, you're not really going to often speak of the bad stuff he was known for. And apparently that is one of the things. He was a womanizer back then.
That's why they got divorced. Well, that's the story. That's why they got divorced is because he was a womanizer. Yeah, it's very interesting. I think you're right. Like when people portray somebody in one kind of light, we want to believe that they are that, right? And it's very hard for people to understand, like, they were actually just an awkward human too. Like that's okay. Because I think that we don't need to idolize someone. We can just say, hey, like, look, they were a normal human, which means if they could do it, I can do it too, right? To me, at least that's the way I see it. It's the same, it's a little off subject, but it's the same with Picasso. Picasso was a horrible womanizer, and his mission was to destroy women that he was with. It's a horrible thing. It was like a couple of women that he was with committed a suicide because his idea was to break them mentally down. So we have an idea, again, like Picasso, like an artist, like a genius.
Yeah.
But then you're like, you don't want to show that side of it. And I honestly think that it's not fair to people. I understand why they do that because, you know, you're in a great light. But it's not fair because I idolize. We think that they're like this amazing creature and like one of a kind. Where like if my son or your son, if they would hear like, oh, they were just awkward, like there, it's okay. Like you can be weird and it's okay to be weird on both sides. And we all have good and bad sides. Nobody's perfect, you know? So
exactly.
I don't think that we're doing a favor to a lot of people by idolizing them, you know, like, and that's the same, like you said, with Einstein. He was a genius, great, but he had a awkward human side to him and he had his own, you know, demons or whatever you want to call that. We all have good and bad sides and it's okay to be weird. It's okay to be different, right?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, not in Picasso's case because you're hurting women, but
for sure.
But in general, I think that, you know, we need to accept that when you like someone on one side, it's okay not to completely have to like everything about them, right?
For sure. And I think to add on to that, when you look at, like, if you were to name, like Tesla, you know, he was very well known and did some really awesome stuff. But even him, he had a weird, dark side to him that a lot of people, you know, contributed to his genius, you know, because a lot of people like to say, if you're so good at something, there's probably a little crazy in you, you know? And so, like, with Einstein being so good at what he was at, he had a dark side, whether it be womanizing and whatever else. With Tesla, the same way. Howard Hughes was the same way over here in America. He did so much, but, you know, at the end of his life, he fell apart. His mental, you know, capability just crumbled, and he became a shell of what he once was.
Wow.
And like with Picasso, you just said, you know, he's looked upon as this great artist and genius. But then, like, because I didn't know about this whole womanizing.
Oh, God, go and research.
Down
super fascinating.
Part of it. So he's got this horrible, you know, craziness about him. And there's a lot of similarities when you look at somebody that's so good at one thing. That they usually is, there's a little darkness in there, you know, to, I don't know if it's, you want to, I guess you could probably slightly correlate it to, you know, the phrase selling your soul to the devil, possibly.
Right,
I'm not
going
to say that as a literal, but as a very weak analogy, you know, to be so good at something, there's something dark,
not necessarily
dark, but crazy on you.
Something different.
Even with Steve Jobs.
Opposite. Yes.
Even with Steve Jobs, you know, he did so much, you know, for the cell phone industry and everything else. But there's a lot of interviews and accounts where he was a rude, belligerent, you know, individual. And you gotta weigh him like, okay, yes, he was, you know, he was rude to people. He wanted things done his way. I mean, if he was a nice, like, oh, you know, take your time, we probably wouldn't be where we are, or, you know, have the phones that we have now. And probably same with Nick, didn't have a little something messed up there. We wouldn't have the, you know, light bulbs and all the other kind of stuff that he's done. There's always a little crazy, like, hell, even if you look at Elon, when you listen to him, he's off. He's like, as a normal individual, you're listening to him, and I love watching his interviews because you can tell, or the way I see it, is he's so far ahead.
Yeah.
I'm seeing when he speaks, he's, in a sense, having to dumb down
his
words so that we can understand it.
He's probably like, oh, God, like, I have to
deal with regular.
He's probably like, oh, God, I have to deal with, like, regular people again. Like, how do I explain this? Like, I'm explaining to a 5-year-old, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love that.
I think that's a great thing that you mentioned because, you know, I see that as yin and yang, right? Like, you have the white side and you have the dark side, and it goes together. Like, it's a duality. Mm-hmm. It's the same with, like, you know, masculine and feminine, although those terms are, like, people are afraid to use those terms because they think that feminine is weak, but it's really not. It's more like, you know, like the water, right? But it doesn't matter. And it's really the duality. You can be two things at the same time. And again, I think that if we allow ourselves to understand that those that we idolize are dual and are human too, and possibly quite awkward in some views, that's okay, right? Because, you know, the school teaches you, like, you have to be good at 15 different things and you have to have A's and all these things. And it's so not true, you know? Like, you know, I always say, like, the IQ test is one of the stupidest things that they could have done to kids. Because what if somebody is a great sculptor, right? Like, they're amazing with what their hands can create, but their math sucks. And so you give them an IQ test and they're like, oh my God, I'm dumb. And of course, if they start believing that, they're never going to create the greatness that they could create. Where the people that we talk about, they allow themselves to be weird. Elon allows himself to be different because that's who he is. Tesla was really, like, he was weird. He had his little weird things. Like, when he ate a meal, he had like 15 napkins next to him. And like with each napkin, he would clean and like put the other one. Like, he had these like really weird things. But at the same time, that's how his mind works. And he allowed himself to be different for the sake of creating what he was great at, right? And I think that's a great message for the kids. Like, it's okay to be weird. It's okay to be different. And you do not need to be great at everything. Like, you can be weird. You can make that work. And you can definitely, you are definitely going to have duality. I think a lot of people, you know, strive to, you know, just try to be like this one thing. And there's a lot of successful people that use their dark side to their advantage to create the success that they have created, right? Like, if you're really, really like angry inside, there's people who use that to actually.
Yeah, if you can channel it in the right way, it can be very beneficial.
Exactly, exactly. Yes, I agree. And I agree.
I think you're hitting on something that I've noticed more and more throughout my life. I'm 30. And I remember being younger, that when you looked at, or whenever I remember hearing about like autism, it was frowned upon. Like, you would hear of someone being autistic and you're like, oh, you know, that poor child, that poor individual, you know, this, that, and the other. And then as we've come to understand, you know, the spectrum as a whole, we're like, you know, you know, he or she might be a little not there in one aspect, but in others, they're leaps and bounds ahead of us, you know, who aren't on the spectrum. Like, what was it? Rain Man, the guy who Rain Man is based off of. Socially, he was not all there, but the man was a freaking genius, way more than you or I or majority of folks could ever be. And when you look at the wide spectrum that there is when it comes to autistic individuals. You look at, even I can't remember the kid's name, but there was a guy who would like take a helicopter ride around New York for like a few minutes and then he would do the whole thing. And probably, I didn't look much into his personality, but he was probably as well a socially awkward person, but then he could do all this amazing stuff. You know, and it's a lot of, when you think of people back in the day, like the Einsteins, the Teslas, the Hughes, you could probably say they were probably on the spectrum and we just didn't understand it back then, you know. And so, but at that time we looked at what they were good at and we focused on that.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that because, again, I remember for sure, like when my son was, when I found out I was having a kid, that was around the time all the one in whatever kids these days were coming, you know, being diagnosed with autism. And I was terrified. I was terrified of it because it is one, it's a learning curve. You know, you can't raise an autistic child. I'm going to assume, I'm sorry if you're listening and you have an autistic kid and you take offense to this, but I'm going to assume it's more difficult than a non-autistic individual. But a lot of those kids end up being really good at one thing or even two things, and they're way better than me or you could ever be.
Yes, and you know, you can back. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, this goes back to the IQ test, and it goes back to our definition of what normal is. You know.
Yeah. Like,
you know, I would take it even a step further. And this is, again, I'm not saying this is how it is. I'm just saying, let's expand our mind a little bit and allow ourselves to see things from a different perspective. And I said this a few times, you know, we mark people, we label people certain things, right? Like somebody's labeled, you know, schizophrenic, or they have hallucinations, and then they're labeled as not normal, and they're, you know, whatever. What if these people are seeing things that are there that we actually don't have the ability to see?
Yeah.
Right?
You don't know?
We don't know. Like, who are we to say, you're seeing things that are not there because I can't see them, so I'm saying they're not there. I'm not saying that's how it is. I'm saying, let's open our mind. Like you said, for autism, like we used to label people and be like, oh yeah, you poor thing. Like he's got autism or she's got autism, where they end up being a genius. And if we're, and it goes to, it's the power of words we use with children too, or anybody, like, right? Like if we tell somebody that they're stupid because their IQ shows that they're not, you know, great at something, this kid or this person is going to grow up thinking that they're stupid, and they're never going to be able to express their true nature. What if somebody's a great speaker, right? Like I'm not going to show in an IQ test that I'm a great communicator, right? But great, and I may be a kid right now and not necessarily so good with it, but I can develop that over time. I'm fascinated with Kobe Bryant, right? And I listened to him talk about how, you know, he loved basketball since he was like five, but he was in a basketball camp when he was, I believe, 12 or 13 for a summer camp, and he didn't score 1 point. He said it was that I didn't make an accident. I didn't shoot a free throw, like nothing, no point for the whole summer. And so his dad, after the summer was done, he said, you know, son, you score a 0 or 60. I love you just the same. Like that makes no difference to me. And Kobe said that was the most important thing that he could hear from his father. But on the other hand, he was like, yeah, great, but screw that. Like I want to show that I can.
Yeah.
What if that kid was told, oh my God, like you suck at basketball, please go do something else. And what if he believed that? We would have never had the greatest of Kobe Bryant, right? Mm-hmm. So again, goes to why are we putting ourselves in boxes? Why are we labeling ourselves as, well, this is not good, or maybe I'm awkward here, so I just shouldn't even try. Or, you know, it's just good to know that nobody's perfect, and we all have good things and bad things, and we all have great things about us and not so great things, and we all have skeletons in our closet, right, so to speak. But that doesn't mean that we can't be great at something. That doesn't mean that we can't show our greatness to the world. So I love that. Like I never thought about that. Like what if these scientists were autistic and they were never diagnosed?
I like how you brought up Kobe though, because that goes in line with, you know, because obviously he passed away here. And then Michael Jordan's documentary came out not that long ago either. And, you know, we were talking about how Steve Jobs was great at what he did, but when you look behind the scenes, he was a rude individual, some say. He wasn't really nice to a lot of people. And when you look at, like, the documentaries of Kobe and Michael, when the team wasn't doing well, they let them have it because they knew they were better. They knew they were better, but they unleashed, you know, the fury of them on it, you know, talking all kinds of crap and saying they better get out and they better do better and all this kind of stuff. And a lot of people are seeing that as, well, how dare he, you know, being so mean and so rude. But then the players talk about it. His teammates are like, yeah, but he pushed us. He knew we were better. He pushed us to be better, and if it wasn't for that, we probably wouldn't have won that game or won that series or whatnot. So, yeah, he might have said, called us a name or two, but it was out of love and respect because he knew we could do what we weren't doing at the time. And I think, you know, that is a lot of things, like you say, you know, you can be mean in a loving way, not just like, hey, you suck, blah, 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 blah. You know, not like that, but like, dude, like, you know better. Come on, like, you know better. Step up to the plate, get it done. You got it in you, let's go. A lot of people need that as well, and that pushes, because once you got somebody in your corner, let's say you're struggling with something, Matt, I don't think I can do it. And then somebody comes around like, man, I've seen you do this. I've seen you do it numerous times. Don't, all that doubt you got, let it go. You've done it before. You can do it again.
Yep.
Let's get out and let's do it. And sometimes you need that push, not just a gentle push. You need someone just to shove you off the edge. Get out there. You can do it. You've done it before. Let's do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a trait of a leader. I work with a lot of leaders. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things is you have to be so confident in you that you know that your message has to go out there and it has to have an impact. Because if you're too nice all the time, if you're always afraid of offending people, you're never going to be a leader. You're never going to have your message out, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of people choose not to be leaders. It's not easy. And people are not going to like you at times. There's how many, you know, CEOs and really great leaders are in their own companies that are liked all the time. And people are like, oh God, like there he is or there she is. Like they're not liked all the time. They have to take that. But in the long run, they can say, that's the leader that we needed, right? Like it's the really hardest thing to do. And that's where the balance that the leader has to play, the game that they have to play, know when to say, okay, listen, like I understand, take a few days off and let's talk about this. And then there are times when they're like you said, like just get in your face, like go out there and do it. And like, I don't even want to hear about it, right?
Yeah,
we have to talk to ourselves sometimes. Like sometimes I look at myself in the mirror and like I'm like, okay, enough. Like enough with this. Like go and get it done. You know, like you just there's
it's just like that. Getting just like, you know, throwing yourself in the fire. You know, kind of same way. Then at that point, it's the environment telling you you got no choice. You better do it, or else you're not gonna survive.
Yeah.
I want to go back into Serbia, though, if we can, because we did kind of get off track, but I enjoyed every minute of that.
Me too. That was awesome.
Because I don't know how long this has gone on right now. But one of the other cool things I learned about Serbia that I'm hoping you can speak a little bit about is that y'all have or had, I don't think they're around anymore, I'm assuming not, one of the most famous group of bank robbers are from Serbia. Are you aware of this?
Nope.
All right. The Pink Panther Gang. I'm sure you've heard of Pink Panther.
Yes, I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Pink Panthers were originally from Serbia, and they ended up with 341 robberies. The Pink Panther Gang have stolen jewels worth 276 million euros.
Yes, I've heard of them, but I really don't know, because this is all, again, like I lived in the United States for 20 years, and this is all like the news from that point on. And I've heard of them, but I was never even aware that they were originally from Serbia, which doesn't really surprise me, because again, like, you know, coming from a socialist perspective, like all things were equal, and you couldn't really, it's not natural for people to be all equal. You have people who want to rise up.
Yeah.
You have people who want to earn more. You have people who want to do more. You have people who are just like driven by adrenaline, right? And in socialism, you can't do that. So you have these interesting groups of people that rise from it, where they just couldn't be themselves for so long that they had to find a way to channel it. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And sadly, for decades and generations in Serbia, and I'm sure that's how it is everywhere on some level, but a lot of times to get rich, people had to steal, right? So you know, that wouldn't really be hard at all for me to believe that they are from here and that they got that idea from here. As a matter of fact, like when I was in the United States, I was at a beach in Miami, and I was approached by a guy from Serbia, actually totally unrelated. He was asking me about my tattoos, and we started speaking Serbian. And he, like, totally was not even embarrassed to admit to me that he stole to get rich. Like, it was just, and we just met.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, like, this is a good reminder why I'm not associating myself too much with my people. It's because it was like, it's so nonchalant, like, almost expected that he wasn't even embarrassed to admit that. He was actually kind of proud of that, you know?
Yeah, and down there in Miami, who knows what else they may have been doing.
So weird. Like, that was the weirdest experience, I swear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you wouldn't expect anyone to walk up to you, blah, 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 blah. By the way, I stole all this stuff to get where I'm at. that you just met. You never,
why would expect that. Like, why were you so proud of that? I was like, oh, that's great.
Yeah. Well, Lex, I want to thank you for coming on today and allowing me to speak to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Go ahead, and I'll give you the final word. You said you do a lot of women empowerment and whatnot, so I'm assuming you have a few websites or links, and I'll get with you afterwards to put them in the description here.
Sure.
But go ahead and let everybody know where they can find you.
Sure. My main website is lexondemand.com, and that's, again, LEKS on demand.com. I am actually in the middle of developing a few projects, and one of them is womenaresuperhuman.com. When it's about empowering women, it's really about empowering women to step up and be the leaders that they want to be and that they were meant to be. My big thing is, you know, of course, it's not like I'm putting men down. It's that I believe and I feel that women were put down for so long. Example, Einstein's wife, right? They were put down for so long and not given credit for the work that they've been doing. And I really believe, like, especially after I became a mom, like, oh my God, like we're superhuman. Like there's so many things that we do. And so I find that a lot of women, and I come from a fitness background. I had a fitness studio for 10 years and that taught me, that opened my eyes firsthand at how women feel about themselves. Because as a matter of fact, before my fitness business, I hardly had any female friends. I was very male dominant, like I was just surrounded with guys all the time. You know, I was like the one of the guys, you know, and just like the tomboy. I was always a tomboy. Mm-hmm. And when I opened as a fitness studio, I predominantly trained women, and it was just so clear for the first time in my life how bad women feel about themselves and how low their self-esteem is. And it really bothered me because I had these beautiful women in front of me that were not comfortable in their own skin, that were not comfortable with who they were. And they had a hard time forgiving themselves for something that happened 30 years ago. So with that, and then with my own self-work, I decided to completely transition into life coaching and empower women leaders to allow themselves to dream big, to allow themselves to get out of the boxes that they have created, right? And then to go on and create goals and missions and just become the best versions of themselves. So I focus on working on the mindset. I focus on self-confidence. And one other thing I focus on is lowering stress, because I find that a lot of people, but especially women, are living in high stress all the time. So one of the things is lowering that stress. And my big thing is meditation. Meditation has changed my life. So once again, all the information is going to be on the website, but I'm creating actually a 21-day meditation challenge as we speak, because I want people to meditation is misunderstood. So many people think, oh, I've tried it and I can't do it and I can't not have any thoughts. And that's not the idea behind it. The idea is that you actually find a quiet place, you center from within, and you start being aware of your inner dialogue. And that's a game changer, because once you start being aware of the way you talk to yourself, you can start being aware of your limiting beliefs. And then once you change them, you change your life.
Well, that sounds like some good stuff. Hopefully all that works out for you.
Thank you.
And again, I'll have all that in the description. So hopefully people can find out, sign up for that meditation. And I thank you very much, Lex. And you have yourself a good one.
That was wonderful. Thank you for having me. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right. You too. Right. Bye-bye. Bye.